Ladies and gentlemen, start your engines. It's time to get revved up for sports, sports, and guess what? More sports on the RPM Roundtable Podcast with Robin Clark, Paul McGaughey, and Mike Sesney.
So the RPM Roundtable is back after a three-week hiatus. We were last here on May 8th. It's now May 30th. I've actually lost track of what episode we're on. I think it's
12.
Episode 12.
Yeah.
Thanks, Mike. That's Mike. He's on the switches over there. He does the recording, the editing. Robin's also here, and I'm the host, Paul. I'm looking at the front page of the Toronto Star, and the headline today is Blackhawks round out Final Four. And, of course, that's referring to the NHL playoffs. The remaining four teams in the West, the final is going to be the Kings and the Blackhawks. In the East, we have the Bruins and the Penguins. This is the second time in NHL history where the four most recent Stanley Cup winners are in the Final Four. I remember when we talked about this earlier in the year, the Blackhawks and the Penguins were kind of favored to get to this point. What about the Bruins and the Kings? Mike, what do you think?
For sure. I think the Kings, obviously, last year's winners. For sure, coming back, their team, the core, is basically the exact same. Jonathan Quick, you know, one of the best goalies in the league. So I'm not really surprised they're back. The Bruins, you kind of suspected maybe age is starting to catch up with them, but they handled Toronto all the way to Game 7. Unfortunately for all of us in this room, that was a heartbreaking moment for us. But Boston, for sure, they're, you know, they won a couple years ago as well, and they're still the same core. They've made a few additions, and they're pretty much ready. I think for sure they're going to – I think they can beat the Penguins, actually. I think Boston lacks the same depth that Pittsburgh has, but I think that – I think Boston might be able to outmuscle Pittsburgh in that series. But I'm not surprised they're back at all.
Now, just as far as the Pittsburgh-Boston matchup, is that a classic case of offense versus defense? Or is
I think so, yeah. I think that's what it'll come down to. And I think Boston definitely has the edge on defense, given that Pittsburgh's problem all year was their defense. But, I mean, it's going to take Boston probably... They're going to have to weather the storm, because Pittsburgh's going to be firing a lot of pucks at the net. And if they can weather the storm and play a solid, sound defensive game, maybe they'll, you know, get a couple lucky bounces and cliche hockey.
Now, Robin, I'm curious to know, with Chara, is there anyone on Pittsburgh that can match up with him?
I don't think necessarily one player can match up against him, but Matt Cook is a name that sticks out. Say whatever you want about him. He shouldn't be in the league. He's dirty, whatever, but he's an ideal third-line player. He, like Mike was saying, all the cliches, he finishes his checks, blah, 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 but he won't back down from Chara. I fully expect him to get on the forecheck and hit him into the glass. Maybe he'll bounce off the majority of the time, but in that series, at least for me, what I look at, I think Pittsburgh ultimately will win. I think they have more firepower. But if Boston does manage to beat them, I think, as Mike was saying, it'll be because of the physicality and also because they're much better in goal. Thomas Vokoun took over because Fleury was bad, and he's played fairly well thus far, but I'm not sure that Pittsburgh has played a team with as much firepower as Boston. So that'll be one thing that I'll be watching.
Now, you mentioned Matt Cook. I believe it was 3 years ago when he essentially ended Mark Savard's career, right? The Boston Bruins forward. Do you believe there's any bad blood left over from that incident between those two teams?
I'm not sure about bad blood specifically, but I know that Cook has gotten into scraps with many players on the Boston team, specifically Gregory Campbell and Sean Thornton. So I wouldn't be surprised if they mixed it up a little bit. Specifically for Mark Savard or to get back at them, I don't think so. I think if you try and play like that, you'll do something stupid, maybe take a 5-minute penalty and the team gets two or three power play goals there and the game's over. So I can't imagine something like that happening.
You know what we are going to see, though, is we're going to see if Jerome Iginla made the right choice during the season there when he was traded. He chose to go to Pittsburgh, obviously. And we're going to see who, if he made the right choice. And definitely it'll be interesting what happens. And that'll be a storyline to follow for sure.
And was it after that when Boston responded by getting Jagr, or did they already have him?
It was afterwards, I think.
Yeah.
I think it'd be pretty interesting, too, if Boston won the series and then Iginla signed with them in the offseason.
Well, yeah, because he's a UFA, right, at the end of the year. Yeah, that would be funny. But we've seen that happen before. I think Hossa did it, didn't he?
He did, yeah. Detroit.
Played with Detroit. They lost in Game 7. I can't remember what year it was offhand, but then he signed with the Blackhawks in the offseason.
Yeah. And so, before that, wasn't he with Pittsburgh?
Yes.
So
let's take a look at the West final now. The Kings, obviously, with Jonathan Quick in net, really good goalie. The Blackhawks, I don't really know what to say about the Blackhawks, Robin. Can you tell me a little bit about them?
Well, basically, they came back from 3-1 down, which doesn't happen all that often. Last night, I'm really happy that they won, mostly because if they had lost, all anyone would be talking about would be the disallowed goal with, I think, a minute and a half left, where the ref called offsetting minor penalties behind the play, had nothing to do with the goal, and that would have just been brutal and a terrible call. So I'm happy they came back and won. In terms of the Blackhawks overall, they went on that incredible run to start the season. Most people think that they peaked too soon because what often happens, you look at the Kings last year winning and they were hot going into the playoffs. And so it's about getting hot at the right time. And so when people said, yeah, this year it'll be Chicago against Pittsburgh in the final, I said, yeah, that's easy to say because they're the two best teams, but that never happens. So I think it'd be kind of interesting if it did, just because that doesn't happen and it'd be a great matchup. And that's actually who I think will meet in the finals.
Yeah, for me, I really thought Detroit was going to finish off Chicago, and they had the opportunity twice, obviously, and they couldn't do it. And I wonder how much yesterday the injury to Filppula for Detroit affected how the end of that game went on, because I know Zetterberg had to step in and take a few draws, and the whole lineup was out of whack, really, when he was gone. And he's a pretty important and integral piece to their offense. But, I mean, justice was served when Chicago scored that goal in overtime, and thank God for my sanity, because I think my Twitter feed would have been exploding for the next 2 days about that if Detroit had won the game. And there's nothing worse than looking at your feed with 7,000 posts about the refs sucking and the NHL getting everything wrong and how could they blow this call. So I'm glad that worked out, because that would have sucked.
Because now you can just look at all that coming from football, baseball, whatever.
Yeah, exactly,
so.
Yeah.
So we saw a 7-game series in both of the West semifinals. Were both of the East 5 games? Or did the Rangers-Bruins one go 6?
No, they were both 5.
They were 5.
They were both, five. So what do you see in the final? Do you see a longer series?
I think so. I think Boston and Pittsburgh will probably push themselves to the limit. I think Chicago and LA will as well. I can see both these series going to Game 7, to be honest with you. It's 4 good teams. I mean, when's the last time the 4 last Stanley Cup winners have been the 4 remaining teams in the playoffs? And it's funny because it never works out like this, and for once it has worked out, and that's good for hockey, but also not good for the teams that never make the playoffs.
And I actually saw a tweet yesterday, Mike. I know you'll like this because you're a big soccer fan.
Oh, okay, yeah.
The best 4 teams made it to the finals. It's basically like a Champions League. We were doing an assignment the other day, and Mike's discovered that he's really liked soccer. So there you go.
So you guys want to talk Toronto FC now? Because
well, just
I don't
before
know
we
way to ruin my day.
Yeah, just before we possibly talk some Toronto FC, both finals in the NHL, the West and the East, get underway on Saturday.
Yeah, that's going to be a good weekend, actually, or a good Saturday evening. If you are a sports fan and you don't want to go out or do anything like me, your girlfriend didn't just go travel halfway across the world and now you're left by yourself.
So you wake up Saturday morning, lots of soccer on, right?
Yeah, I won't watch any of that.
Well, you might, because you're a soccer fan.
I probably won't.
Probably won't.
No.
But then you're going to have some baseball in the afternoon.
Yeah, probably some afternoon baseball. And then you got Chicago, LA at 5, followed by Pittsburgh, Boston at 8 o'clock. And then right after that game's over, you can flip over to Sportsnet, I believe, and watch the Jays and Padres. They kick off at, or kick off. The first pitch is at 10. No kicking off in baseball, I think.
And then Sunday afternoon, you've obviously got the Toronto FC home game.
Yeah.
So head down to BMO and
I'll go cheer them on, put my red face paint on, and cheer for all those missed net or missed shots at the net.
Definitely lots to watch this weekend. Talking about girls, talking about trucks, running them red dirt roads out, kicking up dust. The boys around here. So last night, Robin posted an article on the website, getrealbaseball.com. He's been contributing to this site since the season started, or just before, with some previews. His most recent piece is an American League team-by-team surprises and disappointments. We're not going to go through the entire article, although it is a very good read, but there are a couple things that I want to highlight. Robin, let's start with the Yankees, where you referred to Vernon Wells as a pleasant surprise.
Yeah, definitely. In this article, I basically, as Paul was saying, I just went team by team and gave one big surprise and one disappointment. And, I mean, when Vernon Wells got traded to the Yankees from the Angels, it was nothing more than a salary dump and a way to free up playing time for guys like Mark Trumbo, Mike Trout, Peter Borges, etc. And I mean, Wells is slumping pretty badly right now. I think he's 3 for his last 26, but he was hitting 290 with 10 home runs. And so I still think that he has been the most pleasant surprise as a guy who was just a fill in and wasn't considered to even get playing time on the Yankees, and to give them 10 home runs, that's been fantastic for them.
Yeah, are we seeing the new Vernon Wells, or the real Vernon Wells, stand up right now? The 2 hits and 22 ABs?
I think we are. But still, I mean, even if he hits, what, 260 with 20 home runs or something this year, that's not that bad.
No, that's pretty productive out of, or from what we all expected out of Wells anyways. It was all kind of a joke at the start of the year when the Yankees were signing all the XJs, Overbay and Wells. It was getting a little ridiculous, and both of them seemed to find some production in New York. So,
Jason Nix
as well. Yeah, well, yeah. He's been there for a while, but, man, I don't even know. If he's a starting third baseman, that's a little scary. But
let's look at Baltimore. Robin, I know you're a big fan of their closer, Jim Johnson.
Yeah, he's been fantastic this year. 51 games saved last year, and I saw in a couple of fantasy drafts he was the first or second closer taken, along with Fernando Rodney, which is absolutely nuts because, I mean, it's one season. He came out of nowhere. He didn't strike anyone out, and I'm not going to say that I saw him being this bad, but 2-5 with a ERA in the fives and 4 blown saves in his last 6 appearances. I'm surprised he still has his job, actually.
Are you referring to Rodney or Jim Johnson?
No, Jim Johnson.
Oh, Jim Johnson, yeah. I'm not surprised either. I was one of the people that totally thought that Baltimore couldn't repeat the success they had last year in run games. And Johnson's 51 saves, that had to be a fluke. I mean, how old is he?
He's in his late 20s? Yeah.
Well, it just seemed like a big anomaly because the guy, like you said, came out of nowhere, and you're seeing it now, and I don't know how people thought that he was going to keep up that success without the strikeouts, and I'm not surprised, so I'm kind of glad that I am right about that prediction, because it was getting a little ridiculous with the Baltimore fans at points.
Yeah, that's
Robin
the thing,
has like
right?
7 Twitter wars a week with them.
Yeah, they think that because they were, you know, 73-0 when they were leading after the 7th or whatever, that's a case of having a good manager or a good whatever you want to call it, and it's ridiculous and not repeatable. And as you were saying, I just looked it up now. Jim Johnson is 29 years old, and he had 51 saves last year, but only struck out 41 guys in 68 and two-thirds innings. And you can't have that out of a closer. So
I want to scroll down and look at the AL Central for a minute. The Cleveland Indians are a game and a half back of the Tigers right now. Overall, I think they've been a pleasant surprise. I know when we talked about them leading into the season, we basically had them finishing anywhere from second to fourth. And for them to grab a wild card or win the division, a lot of things would have to go right. Well, one of the things that is going right is Justin Masterson.
Yeah, Masterson, I think he got the win last night. Again, he's been really good. He was acquired by Cleveland for Victor Martinez a few years ago. Boston basically just didn't have a spot for him with all their good young pitchers, guys such as Lester, Buchholz, at the time Daniel Bard. And he's been great for them. Although what I did point out in the article, this isn't including last night, people are saying that this is such a great year for him, and how did it happen? And he was 7-3 with a 3.20 ERA, which is good, but he did go 12-10 with a 3.21 ERA. So people seem to think that this is out of nowhere, but it's just because he was so horrible last year. And so, I mean, if you grabbed him in your fantasy draft, probably as a late round pick, you're doing pretty well for yourself.
Yeah, his strikeouts per 9 innings is way up this year. I think the highest he ever reached was 8.4. He's at 9.1. And I think I said in the season preview that he was a top ace pitcher. And he's finally blooming into that, I suppose. And the 83 strikeouts and 82 innings, like I just mentioned, strikeouts per 9, is very good. I haven't been able to look up how many extra base hits he's given up, but he's only given up 5 home runs in 82 innings, which is tremendous.
Means the sinker's down, probably.
Yeah, the sinker is down. And that's Cleveland's all about the sinker ballers, for sure. They have Jimenez. I think
Roberto Hernandez they used to have,
yeah.
Formerly Fausto Carmona.
Yeah, the artist formerly known as. I think the offseason acquisition of Nick Swisher. Swisher, obviously beneficial to any team he plays on because he's such a character and personality, and I know that Robin's not too big of a fan of the intangibles, but he actually, unlike Kawasaki, is a good player.
Yeah.
And Terry Francona, obviously, is getting the most out of this team for sure. And that offseason pickup of Francona, that was a really smart move by the Indians.
Yeah, it was great.
You could tell that they were forming themselves into a contender because they always seem close every year, like they're going to make a push. And I think we're finally seeing them grow into the team they should be. They have talented players. Michael Brantley is one of them. That guy, I don't know how he finds a way to get on base any way possible.
Well,
yeah, he's got some good legs.
And that's a good point with Francona. He was actually basically the first move that they made in the offseason before they started acquiring players.
Yeah, and he actually, I think he led the way to getting Swisher to actually come to Cleveland too. So that was a big part of it. And he's definitely a player's coach. Like, they want to play for Francona. That's also a little bit of a cliche for you. It's cliche day today here, apparently.
One other note with the Cleveland Indians, there's another Blue Jays connection where they have catcher Yan Gomes, who in just 20 games, as Robin pointed out, is hitting .292 with 10 extra base hits, including 5 home runs.
Yeah, that was part of the John Farrell deal, actually. They got Mike Aviles from Boston for Farrell, and then traded Aviles and Gomes for
Esmiel Rogers.
Yeah, yeah, Rogers, who actually started last night. So that's been an interesting trade for both teams. I think it's sort of worked out. I mean, Yan Gomes always showed a little bit of power, but he's not much of an actual hitter. Like, he strikes out a lot, doesn't get on base, but he's been a pleasant surprise. And as you were saying, Mike, in the season preview about the Indians, I basically wrote them off because they signed guys to contracts like guys who were in contract years, they were counting on to duplicate their success. Swisher, Michael Bourne, Mark Reynolds, and so far all of them have worked out.
Yeah, I didn't like the Bourne signing either. They might find themselves in trouble, though, now that Perez is on the DL, but I don't think he's going to miss too much time, is what I've heard. So they should be able to pick up where they left off.
So again, a lot of good stuff in this article. We're not going to be able to get to all of it, but I do want to end off with the Toronto Blue Jays, where, Robin, your biggest disappointment so far has been Brett Laurie.
Yeah, certainly. Laurie's on the disabled list now. He had a great first season when he got called up, and last year wasn't good, but you see that with a lot of young players. When they have so much success at the major league level, and then they can't follow that up with another good season. But this is now Laurie's second full season, but third season in the bigs. And when he went on the disabled list, he was hitting just .209 with 11 extra base hits and 39 at-bats, which doesn't cut it for a third baseman, or especially a third baseman on a team that's supposed to be good. So he's had his incidents. I'm not going to get into that too much. People say that he should get benched, get suspended, get shipped out of town. I totally disagree with that. When people say that kind of thing, I always say, okay, if you're going to make a major move like that, then who are you bringing in? Who's better? And I'm sorry, Andy LaRoche from Buffalo is not the answer. Nor is Asturias. No, exactly. So
the defense that he brings is enough for him to warrant the position at third base, because he gives you range at third that you can't really get out of a Mark DeRosa or an Asturias, for that matter. Definitely this year, down year for him, huge. I wonder how much him missing spring training with the oblique injury that he suffered in the World Baseball Classic is factoring into this. If he's mentally prepared for this, I don't know how many of the six cans of Red Bull, how much that helps him out every day, but hopefully it helps him heal his leg, or his ankle, rather. Laurie's been hard to watch at times, and then sometimes he comes up with a pretty good hit, but I don't know. It's part of, I guess, the maturation process, and he just kind of reminds me of, are we going to see another Larry Walker, where the guy only plays 120 games a year because he's always injured, because he gives 5,000% whenever he's out there. He has one speed, right, as we all know?
Yeah.
And sometimes you hope that that's going to calm down with age, but then that's his game. If he's not playing at 100 miles an hour, then he's not Brett Laurie.
Yeah, and he might take him out of his comfort zone. Although, what I would say this year is, if you're in your comfort zone right now and you're hitting .209, then change something.
Yeah, so he's got. What I see too is he takes some violent whacks at the ball, and he's striking out quite a bit. And those violent swings, they're not. I don't know if they're charged by that Red Bull. I really don't. I'm really attributing all this to the Red Bull right now, but I don't know.
Well, it's like, if you've got guys with violent swings, you've got Jose Bautista, who has one of the most violent swings ever and has crazy power. And then conversely, you've got Rasmus, who I think has one of the nicest looking swings in the majors. And he just, it's so free and easy, but he can still crush the ball, right? And I mean, I didn't remember Laurie ever having such a violent swing.
No, he's very emotionally charged for some reason. And I think the lower the batting average goes, the more he tries to fight himself out of that hole. And for some reason, he feels like he needs to hit a home run every single game to produce for them. And I think that's his problem, is that he's trying to home run swing everything.
Now, Robin, your pleasant surprise, and I don't think you'll get too many arguments for this, is Casey Jansen, who I believe now has converted 11 of 11 save opportunities, because he got one last night. But I wanted to ask you about Edwin Encarnacion, because I think he's also having a nice year following up what he did last year. I think now he has 14 home runs and 44 RBIs. Did you give any consideration to him when you were looking at the pleasant surprises?
Yeah, certainly. I didn't think Encarnacion, I didn't think he would be bad this year, but I didn't think he would come anywhere close to the numbers that he did last year. I think he's still not quite at the pace of last year, but if he hits 30 home runs and, you know, 100 RBIs, gets the batting average, he's not going to hit 300. But close to 300, then I think that would be great. The only reason I went with Jansen is because, and I got into this with all these Orioles guys on Twitter that Mike was mentioning, and everyone said, oh, well, the Jays' bullpen is going to be terrible, and that's what's going to prevent them. There's question marks at the back end of the bullpen. Sergio Santos is injured, like he is again, and Jansen had the shoulder surgery. And I was actually at the game a few days ago, and they were tied going into extra innings, and everyone was expecting him to come in, and he couldn't get loose because of this shoulder that he had operated on in the off season. But when he's had a chance to get a save, he's been phenomenal, and I don't think anyone... I think it's sort of like with Encarnacion. He was great last year, and people expected him to regress this year, and Jansen's been, I think, almost better this year than he was last year, so... Yeah, that's the only reason I went with it.
He's been the best Blue Jay performance-wise since opening day, for sure. Jansen's been the rock of the team almost, because whenever something goes south, he's always been the one that stayed consistent and steady throughout. So that's a positive sign. I don't know how long he can close. I mean, his strikeouts, he's not a very high strikeout guy either. So you kind of have a concern about that a little at times. Watching the game last night, actually, I was impressed with the two guys that came up from AAA. They were the one, Juan Perez. I think he pitched 2 1/3, I believe, yesterday. 2 2/3, rather. And he struck out 4 of the 7 batters that he was facing. So that was encouraging to see. I mean, the guy's 34. He's a journeyman. You wonder if this is the real deal with him right now, or if it's just yesterday he's charged up coming in for his first game in the majors since last year with Milwaukee. But hopefully he's pretty good. Neil Wagner hit, I believe, 99 on the radar gun at one point yesterday, and he also pitched, believe he pitched 2 innings, yeah, and he struck out 2 guys. So it was encouraging.
Yeah, definitely. I thought Wagner was really impressive. Obviously, he had the power fastball. I'm trying to think who he struck out. I think it was Juan Francisco on a nasty, like, 87-mile-an-hour slider that he just, like, put underneath his hands, and it's great to see. I mean, some of the guys they've called up can barely touch 87 with their fastball. So
Ramon Ortiz?
Yeah, exactly.
You wonder where these guys were the whole year.
Yeah.
Because they actually in the minors had very good stats too. I mean, both of them had an ERA below 1, and their K per 9 is over 10, I think, for both of them. So
kind of like Romero's been doing at Triple A.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah.
So just to sum up, we were talking about Robin's article on GetRealBaseball.com. Those were his AL surprises and disappointments. And look out for Robin's NL surprises and disappointments this weekend. That's on GetRealBaseball.com.
I actually got one more point to make here. I wanted to pose this question to both of you, actually. I'll steal the host role from you for a minute. How long do the Jays keep trying with Romero?
That's a good question. He's getting pretty close to needing a change of scenery, if he's not already there.
I agree. I would have to agree with that, yeah.
I've been the biggest defender of this guy for a while, and even I can't even find any positives, and I can't defend him. I was actually watching the Cubs and White Sox game yesterday, and Carlos Marmol came in, and they were basically saying, and they've been giving him the 7th inning, maybe the 8th, that they were trying to show that he can still pitch because they're trying to trade him. Would you trade Ricky Romero for Carlos Marmol?
I don't think so.
No?
I think Marmol's done as well. I mean, for a reclamation project, I would want somebody that is almost equal in age around, not a journeyman necessarily, but somebody that's also struggling in their organization. And I think we brought this up the other day as Daniel Bard in Boston. I can't remember who posed that question to me. Would you trade Bard for Romero
right now? Yeah, I asked that, I think.
That's kind of an interesting conundrum, really. I mean, that you can look at that in itself, but I think for the benefit of both guys, it would be interesting to see what would happen if they both swapped places and had that change of scenery and just had maybe a new set of eyes and ears to watch them and listen to them and maybe get them on the right track. But then how bad would you hate to see Romero have success in Boston and have to face him every or how many games in a year?
18 or 18, whatever.
Yeah, whatever, changed, or I don't know how many times they've changed it now.
See, I was kind of intrigued when I heard the thing about Marmol. Obviously, he hasn't been that great, but his strikeout numbers are incredible. I mean, he had 72 strikeouts in 55 innings last year. He didn't even have close to a hit an inning. I know the walks are horrible. And in 2010, I know we're going back a ways there, but this is ridiculous. I don't remember anyone with this kind of strikeout rate. He had 138 strikeouts in 77 innings, which is almost two strikeouts per inning, and no one comes even close to that. Mm-hmm. So I think it's kind of intriguing. I know Marmol's, I think, 30 now, and you wouldn't necessarily want to trade a starter for a reliever, but I think I'd rather have Marmol than Bard at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think Marmol is topping out. I think he's reaching the peak of his career. And I think, is his velocity down this year? Is that what's been bothering him?
Yeah, a little bit. And he's also, you know, he has the 14 walks in 20 innings. And his slider, he can throw more consistently than his fastball for a strike, which is just bizarre.
Yeah.
So.
Well, he did just turn 30, I believe, didn't he?
Yeah.
So, not that that's an old age or anything there, Paul. But
couldn't resist that.
30?
No, I couldn't.
30's young.
Yeah, but I mean, for a pitcher, that's not necessarily old by any means either, but you just wonder how much the velocity's come down and if he can still close.
But getting back to Romero just for a second, I believe he has 2 years left at $7.5 million per on his deal. So there's a lot of money tied up in Romero. So it's not like you can just move him.
That's
right?
True, too, yeah.
And there has been even talk of what if you were to give him some work out of the bullpen instead of starting. Do you think, are we beyond the point where that is going to help his mindset?
I don't see how it could hurt at this point. I mean, anything really right now would probably help. Because, the course, part of the course is not really doing anything for him at this moment. He's struggling. I think he's struggled worse every start he makes in Buffalo, and I don't know.
I worked with Cecil.
Yeah. That's a guy you could look at. That I know if you probably mentioned that to him, he would tell you that he's not Roy Halladay or those guys, and he doesn't want to be compared to them.
Like, well, you want to talk about comparisons. I heard an interesting interview on The Fan with Jeff Samet. I was talking to Romero's high school coach. And
oh, yeah, yeah.
Sounds like
too.
We've got another Colby Rasmus situation on our hands, listening to his dad before, and it sounds like this high school coach texts him all the time, and they talk, and he doesn't like his new delivery. He said that his old delivery was aesthetically pleasing, and it looked like Nolan Ryan's delivery. So, like, I'm not sure that's a good thing.
That doesn't sound too promising. Actually, did you hear also Dustin McGowan might be called up in the next couple
of
days?
Yeah.
No, it's going to be interesting. I'll be interested to see what he hits on the radar gun after his 27th Tommy John surgery.
I'm actually curious to see. I loved McGowan when he was first coming up. He was great. So
it's hard not to cheer for a guy like that, but
for sure.
The stuff he had and just the arm. It's hard to give up on a guy like that.
The almost perfect game back in the day against the Rockies. So,
yeah, I've always been impressed that the Jays have stuck with him through his injuries because they've actually extended his contract at least once during this process. So,
well, they see something there. I don't know. People make these, proclamations all the time. I'm trying to think who it was. I think it was Aaron Sebia last year at spring training that, he had the best stuff in the whole organization, and that the pop of the glove when McGowan throws is the best. So, I mean, he's a catcher. He sees all these guys. Maybe he was just pumping his tires, but.
And you see guys that have you know, their starts of their careers are riddled with injuries, and then they come back and are incredible pitchers, like Chris Carpenter is one, for example. And that's why I think they hang on to him, because they wonder. You always wonder, right? Baseball is like one of those sports where it's, you can dream on guys. And I think the Blue Jays really want to see McGowan have success at some point. But you hope he doesn't come up and get plantar fasciitis again and keep pitching through it and tear his arm again. And hopefully that's not the scenario.
So the lineup card for today's show has gone completely out the window, but we're going to do one more segment when RPM returns. Yesterday, John Tortorella was fired as head coach of the New York Rangers. Robin and Mike, I'd love to hear you guys chime in on your thoughts about his dismissal. Robin, you can go first.
Well, I think it's pretty hilarious, actually, that Tortorella got fired. There was a lot of speculation that this was going to happen, and I don't necessarily think it's the wrong decision. He's a screamer, as everyone knows. It wears thin. It's kind of like Lindy Ruff in Buffalo. Tortorella wasn't there for the same amount of time, but it's the same type of style, which is why I kind of doubt that Ruff will be the next coach of the Rangers. But anyway, I just find it hilarious that at the trade deadline, Gabrick got sent to Columbus because Tortorella had him on the fourth line, said he couldn't coach him, whatever. And so it was kind of the organization siding with the coach over the star player, and now they're gone. And Gabrick sent out a tweet basically saying, like, things aren't always as they seem, or, like, stuff always happens for a reason, something like that. So I don't know what's going on with that organization. Lundqvist, in his postseason press conference or whatever, was talking in the past, like, I've had a great time here, I don't know what I'm going to do. Sounds like he's on the way out, so it's a bit of a mess.
That's a shocker. I actually didn't see that, but also the Brad Richards fourth line duties and the press box move for him there in the playoffs was kind of telling as well. It was strange. Not strange if you look at his performance, but he's paid a ton of money to be a star there. And I just thought, I don't know how Tortorella could bench a guy like Brad Richards in the playoffs. Even if he is slumping, you almost have to have him in there.
And he was half the reason that Richards signed there, because of their time together in Tampa Bay.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. So. Yeah, I wonder how much that Tortorella lost the room because of how much he is a screamer and a yeller, and how much the guys finally just tune that out, because at a certain point, if you're not getting the success from it, you just kind of tune it out.
And with Tortorella, you know what you're getting with him. He's a fiery guy.
Yeah.
So he basically gets hired for who he is and fired for who he is, right? So does he get another head coaching job in the NHL?
I think it'll be down the road. I don't think it'll be immediate.
I agree. There's definitely guys available. Like, I think Lindy Ruff obviously gets the first one available, and there's a couple of other guys. I know Dallas Eakins, head coach of the Marlies, was interviewing for the Vancouver job yesterday.
See, I would see him in New York, and I think he would have success in New York.
Ruff Eakins, or Eakins?
Eakins?
Eakins, yeah, I could see
because
that.
Because that team bears a pretty similar resemblance to that Marlies team that went to the Calder Cup. I know it's the AHL and this is the NHL, but he seems to like players that want to play, and there's a lot of guys on the Rangers, Derek Dorsett, guys that like that
Callahan,
now, you know, role players, guys are lunch pail guys, and he gets the most out of those guys, and he's a tremendous coach. I mean, obviously, but he hasn't coached in the NHL yet, but I think the Rangers would be a really good fit for Eakins personally.
And the last thing I just wanted to say about Tortorella, I actually tweeted this out yesterday. I think it's hilarious that everyone thinks that Tortorella would be good in some kind of media job. First of all, his relationship with the media is like he hates them all. And okay, fine, you want to make fun of someone if they ask a bad question, but it doesn't seem to matter what the question is. And also, if people remember when he was on the panel at TSN, he just didn't answer anything. He didn't like the process, didn't like it. So I find that kind of funny, and I hope that doesn't happen.